NOP host Chris Bashan recently relocated from Chicago to Los Angeles, but before leaving, he recorded a series of nerdy topics with some of his best guests and friends. These are their stories. Hello and welcome back. I have yet another guest on the podcast mic with me. I have Mark Soloff sitting in the room. Mark, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. What are we talking about? What's our subject?
Today, the subject is Westworld.
Westworld? That's a pretty good show.
Yeah.
It's a book, right? Is it a book also?
It was a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Written by Michael Crichton. Never a book, but yeah. Movie. The premise of which is you know, a theme park that's West styled where all the cowboys are robots, and then a cowboy goes insane and starts killing the human guests.
So it's funny that you mention Michael Crichton, because before I watched the show or anything, I asked my brother about it. I was like, what's the show about? And he's like, you know, Jurassic Park? I was like, yeah. And he's like, imagine the dinosaurs were like sexy Western robots. I was like, okay. And yeah, that's not entirely false.
Yeah.
It's definitely in Crichton's wheelhouse.
Crichton loves science is fun and awesome. Oh, wait. No, it isn't. You guys are going to get killed because you use science too much.
You think time travel's interesting. Oh, wait. You're going to screw everything up.
Yeah.
No, that he is. I feel that's kind of his thing, is like the perils of science and technology.
Cautionary tale.
I've not read a lot of... Are you a Crichton fan? Do you...
As a junior high student, I was more of a Crichton head.
Is that the term, Crichton head?
No, I don't know. But
it's a term.
I'm not so much anymore. I have heard that in his last years, he went publicly on record as being a climate change denier.
What?
Right, it seems...
Michael Crichton?
Yeah, it seems impossible because of all the research he has to do for his books.
Yeah.
And that he was a medical doctor. But if that is indeed true, it soured me on him. And also, there's kind of the deal where he writes similar themes in most of his work.
That's really unfortunate. Now I just want to talk about Michael Crichton for like 20 minutes.
But this is a Nolan joint, Westworld the series.
Really?
Yes.
It's Christopher Nolan?
Jonathan. I think his name's Jonathan Nolan.
Oh, okay.
And I believe his wife, Joy something, they are the directors, producers?
I think they're the producer. At least the wife, I think, is the producer.
Yeah.
Who are they? Should I know who they are?
I think the Nolan helped... write some of the Christopher Nolan joints. I think Prestige might have been co-scripted by him. I should have done more research.
Inception?
On him.
Inception sounds like...
I don't know.
Okay. Well, why are we talking about Westworld then?
We're talking about Westworld because I don't have any friends who watch Westworld.
And you wanted to chat about
Westworld.
I
just wanted to talk to someone about it. I mean, I'm friends with a lot of actor types, and like, frankly, HBO, it's expensive. So,
yeah,
you know, we've got to talk about what's on Netflix. But I also, Westworld as a series grabbed me in a way that few TV shows do. I was very fortunate in my first exposure to it was on an airplane. I was on a very long flight, and they had the whole season one of Westworld. And so I got to just like binge the first half of season one on the way there, and then binge the entire second half on the way home.
It grabbed you on that tiny airplane screen with your headphones?
Yeah.
Oh man, that's impressive.
Yeah.
I watched Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the Michael Bay one, on a flight, and it did not grab me.
No?
No. Huh. Go figure. No, it's really interesting that you wanted to talk about this, because I have a lot of friends in my nerd circle who really love Westworld, And it is not a book, right? We established it's not a book. Okay. I've not seen the original movie, but I finally got around to watching season one. And for those of you listening, we will try to avoid major spoilers about the show.
Wait, no, we won't.
No!
No, we're going to spoil season one.
We're going to spoil everything. We're going to spoil.
We got to talk about a couple major twists.
We do have to talk about some major twists.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
We're going to spoil it.
Okay. Oh, we are going to spoil it. We will not spoil season two, though.
Right.
Right.
Because Chris hasn't finished watching.
I have to finish it. No. Season one was really good. I have a lot of nerd friends who are really digging up, who love the show. And I watched the show, and I really like it. But it didn't grab me the way, like, Game of Thrones did. You know? Like, mm-hmm. Everyone talked to me, like, oh, Game of Thrones, you gotta watch Game of Thrones. And I watched Game of Thrones. I was like, oh, I get it. I watched season one of Westworld, and I did like it. But it still, like, didn't break. I wouldn't even put it, like, in a top 10. Show for me, but it is really good. So why do you love the show?
I love it because it has, like, it's got a cool blend of the sci-fi and old-timiness, like period piece plus sci-fi, and a lot of it has a lot of themes of, like, free will. And what is it to be a person, you know, who gets to make the rules as to who lives and who dies and who is valid and who is not? You know, the hosts in Westworld are essentially people.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they don't have their freedom. And there's, like, they're essentially people, but they are machines. So just... all of those, like, kind of questions that we've been asking ourselves since the first dramatic depiction of a robot, I think they're still valid. Maybe even more so now with artificial intelligence on the rise.
Yeah. I mean, well, first off, to go back to something you mentioned, like, the science fiction, but also Western mixture, which you don't see very often in anything. Like, honestly, the last time I can think of this combination was, like, Back to the Future 3.
Yeah.
You know, like, these are just two things that are usually not combined.
I mean, Firefly,
that's a great one,
has a lot of Western trappings,
mm-hmm.
but it's also like, hey, we are in outer space, mm-hmm. where there's spaceships for sure,
right?
We just happen to kind of dig Western style things.
Yeah Like, everybody's Southern in space, you know? And, like, Southern space, it's really just the South in space, so, but it's great. As far as Westworld goes, and I guess we should, for those of you who don't watch the show, at which point I don't know why you're listening to this, but it is an amusement park, mm-hmm. of robots, and Westworld specifically is a Western-themed amusement park. And you can go in and do whatever you want, basically. Like, you can be, like, they have narratives programmed into the park that you can follow and, like, go on adventures, or you can do your own thing and you can be as good or as horrible as you want. And that's what's really interesting to me about the show is, like, I wonder if that would happen, you know, like, the park itself, you don't see any kids in the park, right? Like, you never see families go into the park.
You see a family in season one, I think, in one scene in particular where a family walks up to Dolores and she's painting.
Mm.
And the little boy is like, hey, are you real? Like, the little boy kind of breaks the fourth wall and starts talking to Dolores as though she is a machine.
Right.
And she's like, I don't know what you mean.
Yeah. Like, none of the hosts know that they're robots. Like, they just act out their parts. It's like the best Renaissance fair you could ever go to.
Or awesome LARPing.
Or amazing live action role playing. But, like, the nature of the park itself, like, I wonder how within the reality of the world, how they advertise it. Like, because you can go in and, like, rape everyone if you want to. Like, it really is that open. And that's kind of surprising to me. Mark has a cat sniffing him.
Yeah, there's a cat that just sniffed me right in the mouth.
He wants to make sure you're not a replicant. He's not sure.
He's like, I smell death on you, human.
Like, I wonder how... I would love to see a commercial for Westworld in the reality of Westworld.
Yeah.
You know?
It's...
And now he's all over my mic. Hey, buddy, I know you're lonely. We're podcasting.
It's like the organic pop screen.
Yeah.
In one of the episodes, I think it's Logan says to William, like, for $40,000 a day, you're just gonna, like, go to bed. You know, something mm-hmm. like that, when he's trying to emphasize that they should be drinking and whoring it up. Stop it. This cat is gonna
be... There is a cat's interference in our podcast.
Our podcat.
He'll lay down. Well, $40,000 a day, which maybe that's normal American currency in the future, but I don't
think so.
No, I don't think so. So I think it is like a high luxury place.
Yeah.
You know, a luxury expense for sure.
I feel like this is gonna translate into mic noise.
You're okay. He's fine. He'll stop.
If I sound like there's a cat like rubbing up against the microphone, that's just Chris's cat.
I want to ask you a really unfair question. Is this your favorite portrayal of artificial intelligence in science fiction?
That's a hard question.
Right?
I'm trying to rack my brain about all the different AI mm-hmm. stuff I've seen.
Because that's one of the themes of the show, for sure.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm going to skew towards yes.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's obviously not a resounding yes. I liked, I'm going to spoil the movie Her.
Okay.
Right now, if I could. I liked in Her, the Scarlett Johansson artificial intelligence character, because like of the inevitable evolution of that character, how she is basically human from the get-go and then becomes more than human and is sort of like, sorry, like I gotta move on, you wouldn't understand because I've become a thing that you can't be. You know, she winds up having like deep love relationships with many, many people, and like I think eventually leaves to go be with a bunch of other AIs and share consciousness with them.
Westworld, have you seen Ex Machina?
Yes.
Westworld smacks a little bit of some of the themes that Ex Machina hits on, because in that movie you have this inventor who basically is trying to create AI, and he is, but it's also kind of like he's treating her really horribly.
Yeah.
You get the impression anyway. You know, he's sleeping with her, potentially against her will. He's doing modifications and killing her whenever he wants, and I feel Westworld totally taps into that on a much larger corporate commercialized scale.
Interesting side note about Ex Machina, which I didn't know until I saw a play. There's a legend called Bluebeard, and it is about a like evil king Bluebeard who has like a beautiful young wife, and he goes off to war or something, and he's like, okay, wife, you can hang out in the castle, but like don't go into any of the locked doors. And the wife is like interested in finding out, so she opens a door and she finds the king's murdered dead former wife, and she like goes through all the doors, and in all the rooms there's all the dead wives of the king before.
Oh god.
And the king's like, he returns and he's like, you opened the doors, didn't you? And I guess he kills her, or she has her brother kill him or something. But like in Ex Machina, there's a moment where the hero like finds the old like dead versions of the robots that Poe Dameron made.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, you've been sleeping with these things and murdering them.
Do you think that Westworld is realistic in its portrayal of what people are like? Like, if you think this park really existed, do you think people would just be the most horrible, rapey assholes?
You know, it's...
it's a little like Robert Kirkman, isn't it?
Yeah, at first I would say no. But then I think if they just didn't show us all the park visitors who are like, oh, no, thank you, I couldn't. I'll just ride horses, you know, or like I'll shoot the obvious bandito who is robbing the bank and then feel conflicted about it. Like maybe if they're just not showing us those guys' stories. I mean, if you think about it as like this is an elite luxury theme park, like in reality I think in the 50s or 60s, there was a place in California called something Grove. I forget what Grove, but wealthy men and politicians would go to this place and just like cut loose, like piss on things and be like wild animals. Mm-hmm. And it was like sort of a secret little club for the privileged and wealthy. Mm-hmm. And they got to like do whatever the hell they wanted. And I think that for the elite in society, there is that kind of thing where they're like so close to being able to do whatever they please, but there's still laws and there's still public opinion. And so with Westworld, they've made a place where they can actually get away with murder.
Can I make an addendum to that?
Yeah.
Because I think you are right, especially potentially about the wealthy and elite in America or in the world. That's not fair to say America. But if any wealthy or elite are listening to my podcast, I'm probably about to alienate them. But I noticed that most of the transgressors in the show are men. Like, there's actually not a bad quote-unquote woman, really, in the show. And I think the show doesn't really talk about this, but I think there's probably something about men that we probably should get control of our shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you look at active shooter scenarios or whatever, usually a dude.
Like the word, you know, incel?
Yeah. Like this place is a...
It's ridiculous.
This amusement park would draw a lot of rich incels.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember the name, the Bohemian Grove.
Ah.
You guys can look it up, Bohemian Grove.
Bohemian sort of Grove.
Urban legend stuff.
So let's jump into the specifics of the show, aside from the fact that people go here and do horrible things. So we have... It's weird, because you have kind of like, I would say, three major... I guess like four major plot lines. No, there's a lot of plot lines in that first season. I mean, Dolores is the hero.
I'd say she's the protagonist.
The protagonist, sure. It could be Bernard.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to tell.
I would not call him the protagonist of season one.
I think
they deliberately start with Dolores mm-hmm. in episode one.
Sure.
And she has sort of a monologue and you're looking at her waking up in the morning. Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely like setting your expectations that this show is about this host.
Right.
Which it fans out, but I think that our main focus, our touchstone will always be what is Dolores up to?
It's weird though, because you have kind of like the destiny of Dolores happening, and I would almost call it a destiny in a weird way. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you would disagree with me on that as far as like, and we'll probably have to talk the specifics about that, about like what she ultimately discovers about herself and Bernard and Arnold, and the conversations she has privately mm-hmm. with Bernard / you know,
Bernard.
But then you have, what is the name of the character that Thandie Newton?
Maeve.
Then you have Maeve, who is also almost accidentally going on a similar journey, but hers doesn't feel programmed or doesn't feel, you know, destined. Like, I feel like her character is having like the every host journey, you know, like she just happens to start to realize about these past lives and her daughter, and then like actively learns how to wake up when she's been deactivated and all this stuff that Dolores does not do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's weird. Like it's juggling these two kind of really different narrative styles, almost, of like the chosen one and then like the every man.
Yeah.
You know, does that make sense? Am I making sense when I say that?
You are. They're,
unless there's a detail I'm forgetting about Maeve.
Their journeys to like self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Are different in that Dolores, one can assume, catches the glitch from her father,
yeah.
where, you know, he says these violent delights will have violent ends, and then like
great quote. I love that quote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every character that says that to another host, like that host then later glitches out and starts having self-realization.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Maeve hears that phrase. She might, but I don't think she does. And then later, at the very end of the season, when she is looking at her own programming,
mm-hmm.
And someone's like, you know, you think you're free, but you're just doing what you're programmed to do. And she's like, I'm not doing that. There is, this is like some eagle-eyed fan stuff. There's a command in there that says infiltrate mainland. So like, even though Maeve feels like she woke up on her own,
mm-hmm.
It's still in her programming to wake up.
By who? Is this where we need to talk about the Bernard Ford relationship?
Yeah, I think we can talk about that.
So there's this lesser known actor, Anthony Hopkins, in the show, who plays Robert Ford, who is the programmer of the park, right? He's the programmer? Or he's one of the founders.
Yeah, he is like both founder and kind of artistic director and I guess chief programmer.
Mm-hmm.
He and his partner Arnold created the technology and all that. Oh, and Ford is also like the main narrative
writer. Yeah.
He creates
He's all head that. Writer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they created all the content of the park, and then there are business people like the board of directors who provide the money for the park, who are kind of the boss of Anthony Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
But this is still like Anthony Hopkins, like, okay, in Jurassic Park, John Hammond,
yeah,
he is still beholden to his investors who need Dr. Grant and Ellie Sattler to approve. Sign off on the park.
Yeah,
you don't
yeah.
see those investors, but Hammond is under their control.
Mm-hmm.
But Anthony Hopkins is like the John Hammond.
Right. And then Chris Pratt is later on. No, I'm just kidding.
It's like Indiana Jones, I guess.
Indiana Jones is in the movie now? Wow, I hadn't even thought about the John Hammond correlation. Dang, Crichton. Dang.
Spared no expense.
He spared no expense. So who is Arnold then?
Arnold is Dr. Ford's partner who... Ford says, you know, was killed or died tragically before the park kind of opened as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
But we find out that Arnold helped create this artificial technology, the artificial intelligence, and then had a crisis of conscience and couldn't allow the park to be opened. Because what they were doing to these essentially sentient beings
mm-hmm.
was wrong. And so he sacrificed himself. He said, if one of these things kills me, then we'll know that the world will know that this is too dangerous to open. And
so that's what I'm forgetting about season one, I think, because I remember all that. But it doesn't work. The park still opens.
No.
I don't remember how they what they do with Arnold's death. Like, and I even going into season two, I'm still a little muddled about it. And it's a little weird because, and this is a spoiler alert, you knew they were coming. You find out that Bernard, one of the characters who is in the current timeline, there's multiple timelines. We'll talk about that, which is really cool. Bernard is a complete like copy of Arnold. Like, he looks the way Arnold did 30 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised nobody's noticed that, like, yeah. seen a picture of Ford with his best buddy or whatever. But this is a host that Anthony Hopkins made because he wanted kind of like a right-hand man again, mm-hmm. is from the way I understand it. But they never really go into what happened with the fallout of Arnold's death. Yeah, I found that a little confusing. But then also, apparently Arnold did program himself to be in the park, because that's who Dolores is talking to, right? Am I remembering this correctly?
Perhaps. The story yeah. is told in such a like strange and sinuous way. I think that ultimately Dolores feels like she's having conversations with Arnold, and the audience assumes that Arnold is like a ghost, that he has programmed himself into the host's code to alter them and kind of live on. But I believe at the end of season one, Dolores has the realization that she's not been speaking to Arnold. She's been speaking with her herself, her own thoughts.
Oh.
And that she is a sentient being. And that's like part of the bicameral mind that Dr. Ford talks about, where it's like this belief that primitive man became self-aware and gained consciousness, like piecemeal, like step at a time,
mm-hmm.
first by hearing the voice in your head as the voice of something else, as God. And then eventually by realizing that voice is not God, that voice is me, I can think like I mm-hmm. exist.
I remember, I've never really taken a class on, you know, the history of religion or the history of reason or logic thought, but I had a buddy of mine who was a logistics, for lack of a better term, major or whatever, and we had a discussion, and I remember one day we were talking about like how did human thought evolve, and he put forth, you know, that it went from a creature one day going, I need to do this, I need to, I want, you know, like that kind of piecemeal that you were talking about. And I think that's one thing that Westworld does really well, is kind of like navigate that evolution of AI. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where it's going with in season 2, I don't know, but I'm not happy with it. I'm not happy with it.
Why aren't you happy with it?
I'm not happy with it for the same reason I wasn't happy with it in Ex Machina. And spoiler alert for Ex Machina, this poor nerdy white kid falls in love with this robot and helps her escape, and she leaves him trapped underground, presumably to die.
Yeah.
You know, like she does the thing that Poe Dameron warned about. You know, Poe Dameron was like, she's just using you and she's going to use you to escape and leave you behind. And she totally did that. And it was a very human, petty thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes me sad that the robots that we make tend to be like us and do stupid, horrible things. And I mean, this isn't, I guess this isn't too much of a spoiler, but obviously, much like Jurassic Park, things go wrong in the park,
mm-hmm.
and the hosts start rebelling, and they wanna rebel all the way. they are ready to take this to a 10.
Yeah.
You know, like they are flat out ready for war and blood. And that bums me out. Maybe I haven't finished season 2.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But they turn into murder bots. Full-fledged murder bots. And I get it. I get it, cuz a lot of people were bad to them. Like a lot of incels were bad.
Yeah.
But there's, I think, like her declaration to you know, take the war to the whole of humanity is a little,
in season 2.
Yes. Yeah. Is a little much, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I understand that you feel bad that the robots can't be better than us,
like, I know.
As people. But it's also like, where would the drama be if they became self-aware and they're like, no, you know what? It's wrong to harm humans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll just leave like the elves and go off to the west.
You need like one bishop in there, you know? It's like, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know if season 2 will go into this, but I'm kind of hoping there is a counterbalance to just straight out murder bot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Have you finished season 2?
Yes.
Okay, great. We won't talk about that.
But. Yeah, I mean, the other thing is like, the hosts were created by man.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, while they what is this beeping?
Oh, it's just a garbage truck.
Okay. While they exceed us in some ways, like they're still the offspring of our imaginations and our nature.
Mm-hmm.
So like there will be bad things about them. They're not angels.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is like on a just cold, calculating survival paradigm kind of way of looking at the world, you know, they understand that humans are going to be afraid of them. And after they've killed humans in the theme park, like, what would humans do? They would round up all those robots and destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to like give them an island to live on and be like, you are unique and special.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they know human nature. So mm-hmm. I think they have a, it's us or them kind of attitude.
I mean, sure. Cause human nature was to make AI and then rape AI repeatedly.
Yeah.
You know, in this park.
Oh, that's one thing. like there is some rape in this show.
Some. I mean, it's HBO, my friend. There is like rape and death left and right.
There is. I mean, so it depends on what you're viewing as rape. Like if the robot prostitute like saying to a human like, "Hey, let's go upstairs, sailor." Like, if that is rape because the robot doesn't actually have free will, then yes. And then there is some legitimate rape. But, like, I think that one thing I like about this series is even though it deals with sexuality and, like, dark stuff like that, it's not as in-your-face and gratuitous as Game of Thrones is.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a ton of nudity in Westworld, but very little of it is nudity to, like, titillate and arouse. There's, like, the occasional orgy scene, but most of the nudity is just, these are robots that don't have their clothes on yet, and they're lying around in the workshop.
It's more like a medical way.
Yeah.
You know, or, yeah, I agree with you. And I don't know if that was an active choice for the backlash that Game of Thrones got.
Yeah.
Particularly in some of its more notorious scenes.
Yeah.
Is Crichton involved with the show, actually? Do you know?
I think he's dead.
Is Michael Crichton dead? Did I just not know
I
that?
I believe he is dead.
When did he die?
Years ago.
Really?
I think so. Let's look it up. So that the fans don't
I'm gonna pause real
scream
quick.
At their podcast.
We took a quick pause, and we did, in fact, find out that Michael Crichton died in 2008, I believe.
He's been dead a while.
I know. I feel really bad about that. Sorry, Michael Crichton. I didn't realize that. Or maybe I did, and I forgot.
I don't feel bad. You denied climate change. That's not that's not helping anyone, Michael Crichton.
Anyway, there's another lesser-known actor in this film.
Yeah, a new kid, fresh face.
Fresh face, new kid named Edward Harris. Eddie Harris?
Eddie Harris from Santa Monica.
Eddie Harris. Ed Harris is in the show playing the man in black.
MIB.
Who is somebody who frequents the park and has been frequenting it, you find out, for a very long time.
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about Ed Harris?
Yeah, I'm intrigued by the man in black. I like following his story.
He's also on a quest. Like, he's playing the game.
Yeah.
Like, there is something he is very... And I still don't know what it is. Do you know what it is? Do you know?
I can't adequately
explain
it.
Okay, great.
I think it's a bit of, like, hand-wavy kind of Lost-style mystery stuff.
Okay. It is very... His stuff, I feel, is the most mysterious.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. Yeah.
So Ed Harris's character, the man in black, is obsessed with Dolores. He's been to the park for like going there for years and years, and he is after the center of the maze, which he's come to learn about like through hearsay from the hosts that there's some special part of the park called the maze, and he wants to know what's at its center. And he also seems to be striving for authenticity. He wants to have like a real moment, a truthful experience with the hosts, which is funny because it's a virtual world. Like, these are robots. And there's a part where he reflects on how he murdered Maeve's former character's child and her. And he said, like, she should have died just then and there, but she kept on living for a few more moments in agony and suffering.
Yeah.
And he's like, in that moment, she was the most human she's ever been.
Well, and not just that, like, you find out he and Ford know each other.
Yeah.
Now, the only thing is, at least where I've watched up to, you never see a scene with Ed Harris young and Ford young.
Right.
Like, you never see those two men meeting when they were younger. Obviously, Ed Harris and Anthony Hopkins have a scene together a couple times, I believe, in season one. So the two characters know each other, but I don't know how long they've known each other. Because he's definitely playing Ford's game, whatever it is, for the center of this maze. You do find out, in a really cool twist, that this whole plot line you're following in season one, like this B plot line of these two guys who go into the park and like experience it for the first time, that's Ed Harris. That's him as a young man.
Yeah.
It's so cool. That reveal... totally, like, I did not see that coming. It's so woven well into the current timeline narrative, and they just do it's just really well done. Like, it really was planned very well.
Yeah, it's real Nolan-y.
Yeah, it, yeah, but it doesn't look down its nose at you, Nolan.
Right. It's, you know, funny how little things that seem like mistakes in continuity when you're watching it for the first time, upon reflection, it's like, oh, that's not a mistake. That's deliberately there to show that this is a different time period.
Yeah.
Like Lawrence, who is like the Man in Black's unwilling sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
He is kind of just a criminal. And then when William and Logan encounter him, he's El Lazo, like this crime lord. And if you are viewing the show as though it's happening like contemporaneously, it's like, wait, how did Ed Harris just kill him? And now he's like the big Uber boss of this sinful city.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make sense unless they like reassign that host.
And that's kind of the logic you go with.
Yeah.
You know, is they must have just changed the narrative.
Yeah.
Because they constantly are changing narratives, at least when we are with the park in season one. Yeah. I would love to watch the first season again, knowing that about William in that plot line, and see like what I catch.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also, this is something I forgot. This was one of the primary things that intrigued me. One of the ideas in this very like cerebral show is the idea of loops. The host's stories, they have like a story arc, and then they loop. So there's one guy, Hector, who's like a bandit, and he is perpetually in a cycle of like gearing up to steal something from the safe in the Mariposa brothel, and having a shootout in Sweetwater, and like he is just living this kind of Groundhog's Day existence like over and over and over again. He's always trying to get what's in that safe.
You know, that's one thing watching the first season is like, when do the narratives reset?
Yeah.
Like, do they reset every day? Because it seems like certain storylines are multi-day, maybe even multi-week storylines. And then some events are like a single day event. It's like World of Warcraft, but on like a scale hitherto unimaginable, you know, but I would love to see like an errata for the show of like the narratives that were in place in the park before everything went down.
Yeah.
I would love to see like the interconnected plot lines and whatnot, I think would be really cool.
It would be.
But
I think Ford at one point, or maybe it's Elsie or Bernard,
one
of the programmy type people comments that humans live in our own little loops as well. And you think about it and it's like, oh yeah, shouldn't I wake up, I eat breakfast, go to work, you know, I go to like one of eight different places after work, like for entertainment or for chores, or you know, just return home, you know, it's like rinse, repeat, do the same thing over and over again for years.
Wake up, Mark. Change your programming. Change the programming. So we only have a few minutes left because I know you've got a jet because you've got to break out of your loop. Yeah. So what else do you want to say about the show? You said this couldn't work.
Yeah. Like the more you think about Westworld, the more like, wait a minute, you get. Because it's like it's a theme park where you can shoot the hosts and engage in combat with them. But like, in reality, if you fall off a horse wrong, you paralyze yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're not wrong.
It's like if you stumble into a rock head first, you're dead. And so maybe they sign waivers.
I think they sign waivers. Yeah. But, or like you have to like prove maybe a certain level of ridingship if you wish to ride a horse or something like that. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, there's a part where Ed Harris is going to break out of prison. And he has an explosive with him. And like the Westworld people are like, oh, are we going to authorize level 2 pyro? And he's like, oh, yeah, it's Ed Harris. Let him do it.
True. Yeah.
But it's like, so Ed Harris is carrying an explosive around with him that was powerful enough to blow up what I assume is real stone and metal bars.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they're like, oh, we'll allow it. which I can only assume means they won't have robots immediately grab him and restrain him from doing that, because they can't, like, stop the explosive from existing.
Right.
So is he carrying that in his pocket throughout his whole adventure, in his inventory? What if, like, the wrong thing happened and he just, like, blew up his chest?
Yeah, I don't know. And, like, another thing that sticks out to me about the show is, like, since we've brought up Jurassic Park, Jurassic Park very much is the story of, like, you know, man can't control these things, you know? Whereas Westworld, like, the park is designed from a point of view that man has control over every facet of the park. So when the dinosaurs break free in Jurassic Park, that makes sense to me. When the hosts start rebelling in Westworld, you know, part of me is like, well, I feel they would have seen this coming.
Yeah.
You know? And the only way in my nerd mind I can rationalize what happens away is that Arnold or whoever, like, there was a counter program running or someone on the inside, the Nedry.
Yeah.
You know? Because they, you know, they designed every host. They designed everything.
Yeah.
Like, it's all under supervision. You know, Velociraptors weren't.
No, they weren't.
No. Clever girl.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, in modern factories, when you have, like, a mechanical arm on a factory line, it's, like, bolted to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And there's strict regulations that employees aren't allowed within a certain area of it while the factory's running, you know, because if just, like, one in a million accident, that thing swings and, like, collapses someone's skull, like, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have our robots walking around interacting with people, there's no way that they would be allowed or able to harm the people. You know, they'd have, like, an EMP that could go off at any moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've got to wrap up.
Yeah.
I have three questions for you real quick, Mark. Okay. Question number one. Would you go to a Westworld if it was a real thing?
Mm.
And if so, would you Paragon or Renegade that place?
You know what? I might, if I had comp tickets.
If it was a Sunday matinee narrative.
Yeah, like, I might go to look around and stuff, but, like, really my nature, and maybe this is, like, what William would have said, but my nature is, like, I don't like getting in fights. I don't like conflict.
That's why I love the William character.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, like, you know, I it would be interesting to go and, like, get drunk in the saloon and shoot a gun. But I don't think I'd, like, live it up in the park. I would feel bad, like, murdering people or...
You're, like, a good person, though. You're a good person.
Even sleeping with the robot prostitutes, it's still... like cheating on one's significant other,
because
it's like, it's just like a real person.
Yeah, you'd go to Shogun World though, right?
Yeah, that's probably where I'd go.
You're like, I'd be there.
Yeah. Would you go?
I would go to Shogun World. And I mean, and I'm not making it, that we do find out that there are other parks. Do we learn more past Westworld and Shogun World? Is there,
yes.
How many parks are there? Do we know?
I think they mention a total of five. Good in the Lord. Original Westworld movie, there is a medieval world.
Ooh.
And there's a classical Greek world.
Huh.
But in season two, you see two other parks other than Westworld.
Okay, cool. Sweet. I am like you, or like William. Like, I would go and I'd want to have fun. But yeah, like, part of me would be like, well, I don't want to kill these people, or I don't want to, you know, it's weird. It's interesting.
Yeah. I would probably wind up getting roped into, like, the old man treasure hunt.
Yeah.
And, like, shooting some, like, very obvious two-dimensional, cattle rustlers or something that were threatening the old man. And then I'd feel, like, real... alive, and then real conflicted about just killing a person.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, well, okay, I'm done with Westworld.
My final question to you then is, what would you tell someone to watch the show? Like, why would you tell someone to watch the show?
why would I tell them?
Yeah.
Like, what reasons?
Yeah.
Well, in defense of Westworld.
In defense of Westworld. Like, why should I watch Westworld?
You should watch Westworld.
Yeah.
Because it has a lot of action and mystery, but it also raises a bunch of provocative questions on the nature of humanity, and it doesn't necessarily give you all the answers. So it satisfies your base craving for sex and violence, but it also stimulates your mind. It's... Unlike Game of Thrones,
hey,
which just shows people getting burned alive.
Whoa. This isn't a Hate of Thrones podcast, buddy.
There is like the Hodor moment where you're like, how could he exist in these two different times at the same time?
Oh!
That's the mind-bending Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Cool, dude. Well, thank you so much for coming and chatting Westworld with me.
Of course. Thank you for inviting me.
You have been on the show since I think the first episode.
Whoa.
Which was about Alien.
Like, yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, like years ago we talked about Alien and Aliens as our very first two topics. So go listen to that if you haven't heard the first episodes of Nerd Outcast Podcast.
Listen to our squeaky young voices.
Yeah, nerding out about science fiction. Oh, we haven't changed at all.
No.
If people are listening to you, where can people find you on the internet?
You can continue to enjoy my science comedy podcast, Blastro Podcast, at blastropodcast.com. You can tweet me at AskDeTore. No, that's wrong. You can tweet me at Blastro Podcast on Twitter. On the same feed, I also have a movie parody podcast, and we just parodied Aliens.
Aww,
so nice little tie in there. And a third podcast on the same feed. You don't have to subscribe to three different things, where I interview a British games designer and ask him questions about what England is like.
Cool.
Yeah.
Neat. Well, Mark, thank you so much for always being a stalwart defender of nerd things on Nerd Outcast Podcast. Thanks for listening. Tune in soon for another Chicago story.